So what about her personal life? Helen Roden asked.
Nothing jumped out at me. She was just an ordinary woman. But I'll keep digging. I'll go down a few levels. Got to be something there.
Do it fast, Rosemary Barr said. For my brother's sake, we have to get him out.
We need medical opinions for that, Ann Yanny said. Regular doctors now, not psychiatrists.
Will NBC pay? Helen Roden asked.
If it's likely to work.
It should, Rosemary said. I mean, shouldn't it? Parkinson's is a real thing, isn't it? Either he's got it or he hasn't.
It might work at trial, Reacher said. A plausible reason why James Barr couldn't have done it, plus a plausible narrative about someone else doing it. That's usually how you create reasonable doubt.
Plausible is a big word, and reasonable doubt is a risky concept. Better to get Alex Roden to drop the charges altogether, which means convincing Emerson first.
I can't talk to either one of them, Reacher said.
I can,
Helen said.
I can, Franklin said.
And I sure as hell can,
Ann Yanny said.
We all can, apart from you.
But you might not want to.
Why not?
Helen asked.
You're not going to like this part very much.
Why not?
Helen asked again.
Think, Reacher said. Work backward. The thing with Sandy being killed, and the thing in the sports bar Monday night, why did those two things happen?
To tie you up, to prevent you hurting the case.
Correct. Two attempts, same aim, same goal, same perpetrator.
Obviously.
And the thing Monday night started with me being followed from my hotel. Sandy and Jeb Oliver and his other pals were cruising around, standing by, waiting until someone called them and told them where I ended up. So really, it started with me being followed to my hotel, much earlier in the day.
We've been through all this.
But how did the puppet master get my name? How did he even know I was in town? How did he know there was a guy here who was a potential problem?
Someone told him.
Who knew? Early in the day on Monday. Helen paused a beat.
My father, since early on Monday morning, and then Emerson, presumably, shortly afterward. They'd have talked about the case. They'd have communicated immediately if there was a danger that the wheels were coming off.
Correct. Then one of those two guys called the puppet master, well before lunch on Monday.
Helen said nothing.
Unless one of those two guys is the puppet master, Reacher said.
The Zek is the puppet master. You said so yourself.
I said he's Charlie's boss, that's all. We've got no way of knowing whether he's actually at the top of the tree.
You're right. I don't like this line of thinking at all.
Someone communicated, Reacher said. That's for damn sure. Either your father or Emerson. My name was on the street 2 hours after I got off the bus, so one of them is bent, and the other one won't help us either because he already likes the case exactly the way it is. The room went quiet.
I need to get back to work,
Ann Yanny said.
Nobody spoke.
Call me if there's news,
Yanny said. The room stayed quiet. Reacher said nothing. Ann Yanny crossed the room, stopped next to him.
Keys?
He dug in his pocket and handed them over.
Thanks for the loan. Nice car.
Linsky watched the Mustang leave. It went north. Loud engine, loud exhaust. It was audible for a whole block. Then the street went quiet again, and Linsky dialed his phone.
The television woman is out of there.
The private detective will stay at work,
the Zek said. So what if the others leave together?
I hope they don't.
What if they do?
Take them all.
Rosemary Barr asked,
Is there a cure for Parkinson's disease?
No, Reacher said. No cure. No prevention. But it can be slowed down. There are drugs for it. Physiotherapy helps. And sleep. The symptoms disappear when a person is asleep.
Maybe that's why he wanted the pills. To escape.
He shouldn't try to escape too much. Social contact is good.
I should go to the hospital,
Rosemary said.
Explain to him, Reacher said. Tell him what really happened on Friday. Rosemary nodded, crossed the room, and went out the door. A minute later, Reacher heard her car start up and drive away. Franklin went out to the kitchenette to make coffee. Reacher and Helen Rodin were left alone in the office together. Reacher sat down in the chair that Rosemary Barr had used. Helen stepped to the window and looked down at the street below. She kept her back to the room. She was dressed the same as Rosemary Barr. Black shirt, black skirt, black patent leather shoes. But she didn't look like a widow. She looked like something from New York or Paris. Her heels were higher, and her legs were long and bare and tan.
These guys were talking about our Russians, she said.
Reacher said nothing.
My father is an American.
An American called Alexei Alexeyevich.
Our family came here before World War I. There's no possible connection. How could there be? These people were talking about our low-life Soviets.
What did your father do before he was the DA?
He was an assistant DA.
Before that?
He always worked there.
Tell me about his coffee service.
What about it?
He uses china cups and a silver tray. The county didn't buy them for him.
So?
Tell me about his suits.
His suits?
On Monday he was wearing $1,000 suit. You don't see many public servants wearing $1,000 suits.
He's got expensive tastes.
How does he afford them?
I don't want to talk about this.
One more question. Helen said nothing. Did he pressure you not to take the case? Helen said nothing, looked left, looked right, then she turned around.
He said losing might be winning.
Concern for your career?
I thought so. I still think so. He's an honest man.
Reacher nodded. There's a 50% chance you're right. Franklin came back in with the coffee, which was a thin, own-brand brew in three non-matching pottery mugs, two of them chipped on a cork bar tray with an open carton of half-and-half and a yellow box of sugar and a single pressed steel spoon. He put the tray on the desk, and Helen Rodin stared at it, like it was making Reacher's point for him. This is how coffee is served in an office.
David Chapman knew your name on Monday, she said. James Barr's first lawyer. He's known about you since Saturday.
But Chapman didn't know I ever showed up. I assume nobody told him.
I knew your name, Franklin said. Maybe I should be in the mix, too.
But you knew the real reason I was here, Reacher said. You wouldn't have had me attacked. You'd have had me subpoenaed. Nobody spoke. I was wrong about Jeb Oliver. He isn't a dope dealer. There was nothing in his barn except an old pickup truck.
I'm glad you can be wrong about something,
Helen said.
Jeb Oliver in Russian.
Apple pie, Reacher said.
Therefore, these guys can work with Americans. That's what I'm saying. It could be Emerson. Doesn't have to be the DA.
50% chance. I'm not accusing anybody yet.
If you're right in the first place.
The bad guys were all over me, very fast.
Doesn't sound like either Emerson or the DA to me, and I know them both.
You can say his name. His name is Alex Rodin.
I don't think it's either one of them.
I'm going back to work, Helen said.
Give me a ride? Reacher asked. Let me out onto the highway?
No. I really don't feel like doing that.
She picked up her purse and her briefcase and walked out of the office alone. Reacher sat still and listened to the sounds out on the street. He heard a car door opening and closing, an engine starting, a car driving away. He sipped his coffee and said,
I guess I upset her.
Franklin nodded.
I guess you did.
These guys have got someone on the inside. That's clear, right? That's a fact. So we should be able to discuss it.
A cop makes more sense than a DA.
I don't agree. A cop controls only his own cases. Ultimately, a prosecutor controls everything.
I'd prefer it that way. I was a cop.
So was I.
And I have to say, Alex Rodin kills a lot of cases. People say it's caution, but it could be something else.
You should analyze what kind of cases he kills.
Like I don't have enough to do already.
Reacher nodded, put his mug down, stood up.
Start with Oline Archer, the victim. She's what's important now.
Then he stepped to the window and checked the street. Saw nothing. So he nodded to Franklin and walked down the hallway and out the door to the top of the outside staircase. He paused on the top step and stretched in the warmth, rolled his shoulders, flexed his hands, took a deep breath of air. He was cramped from driving and sitting all day, and oppressed by hiding out. It felt good just to stand still and do nothing. High up and exposed, out in the open, in the daylight. Below him to his left, the cars were gone, except for the black Suburban. The street was quiet. He glanced to his right. There was traffic building up on the north-south drag. To his left, there was less. He figured he would dodge west first, but a long way west, because the police station must be near. He would need to loop around it. Then he would head north. North of downtown was a warren. North of downtown was where he felt best. He started down the stairs. As he stepped off onto the sidewalk at the bottom, he heard a footfall 15 feet behind him. A sidestep, thin soles on limestone grit. Quiet. Then the unmistakable crunch-crunch of a pump-action shotgun racking around. Then a voice. It said, "Stop right there." An American accent. Quiet, but distinct. From somewhere way north. Reacher stopped, stood still and stared straight ahead at a blank brick wall across the street. The voice said, "Step to your right." Reacher stepped to his right, a long, sideways shuffle. The voice said, "Now, turn around, real slow." Reacher turned around, real slow. He kept his hands away from his body, palms out, saw a small figure 15 feet away. The same guy he had seen the night before, from the shadows. Not more than 5'4", not more than 130 pounds, slight, pale, with cropped black hair that stuck up crazily. Chenko, or Charlie. In his right hand, rock steady, was a sawn-off with a pistol grip. In his left hand was some kind of a black thing. "Catch," Charlie said. He tossed the black thing underhand. Reacher watched it tumble and sparkle through the air straight at him, and his subconscious said, "Not a grenade." So he caught it, two-handed. It was a shoe. A woman's patent leather dress shoe, black, with a heel. It was still slightly warm. "Now toss it back, just like I did." Reacher paused. "Whose shoe was it?" He stared down at it. Low heel. Rosemary Barr's? "Toss it back. Nice and slow. Assess and evaluate." Reacher was unarmed. He was holding a shoe. Not a stone, not a rock. The shoe was lightweight and unaerodynamic. It wouldn't do anyone any harm. It would stall and flutter in the air, and Charlie would just swat it away. "Toss it back," Charlie said again. Reacher did nothing. He could tear the heel off and throw it like a dart, like a missile, but Charlie would shoot him while he was drawing his arm back and winding up. Charlie was 15 feet away, poised, balanced, unblinking, with the gun rock steady in his hand, too close to miss, too far to get to. "Last chance," Charlie said. Reacher soft-tossed the shoe back, a long, looping underhand throw. Charlie caught it one-handed, and it was like the scene had rewound right back to the beginning. "She's in summer school," Charlie said. "Think about it like that. She's going to get acquainted with the facts of life. She's going to work on her testimony about how her brother planned in advance, about how he let slip what he was going to do. She's going to be a great witness. She's going to make the case. You understand that, right?" Reacher said nothing. "So, the game is over now." Reacher said nothing. "Take 2 steps backward." Reacher took 2 steps backward. They put him right on the curb. Now Charlie was 20 feet away. He was still holding the shoe. He was smiling. "Turn around." "You gonna shoot me?"
"Maybe."
"You should."
"Why?"
"Because if you don't, I'm going to find you and I'm going to make you sorry."
"Oh, big talk."
"Not just talk."
"So maybe I'll shoot you."
"You should."
"Turn around."
Reacher turned around.
Now, stand still.
Reacher stood still, faced the street. He kept his eyes open, stared down at the blacktop. It was laid over ancient cobblestones. It was full of small humps in a regular pattern. He started counting them to fill what might be the last seconds of his life. He strained to hear sounds behind him, listened for the whisper of clothing as Charlie's arm extended, listened for the quiet, metallic click as the trigger moved through its first tenth of an inch. Would Charlie shoot? Common sense said no. Homicides were always investigated. But these people were crazy, and there was a 50% chance they owned a local cop, or that he owned them. Silence. Reacher strained to hear sounds behind him, but he heard nothing. Nothing happened. Nothing at all. 1 minute. Two. Then 100 yards away to the east, he heard a siren. Just 2 brief electronic blips from a cop car forcing a path through traffic.
Stand still,
Charlie said again. Reacher stood still. 10 seconds. 20. 30. Then 2 police cruisers turned into the street simultaneously, one from the east and one from the west. They were both moving fast. Their engines roared, their tires howled, their sounds beat against the brick. They jammed to a stop. Doors opened, cops spilled out. Reacher turned his head. Charlie wasn't there anymore.